And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito, and I'm joined, as I am every Monday, by my co-host, Loretta Fralick, here on EWTN's new voice for Catholic Radio in the Chicagoland area, WSFI, and WNDZ on AM 750. So thank you for making us a part of your Monday lunchtime. Well, as I started the tease at the end by saying, I have a beef with Matt Rosenberg.
No, what could it be?
Matt, are you there?
I am here.
Do you see what I... Matt sounds afraid, and he should...
I don't think Matt could ever sound afraid. Oh, he's too smart.
Trust me, Mary, I am not afraid.
Matt and I are going to go mano a mano here, because I got a... See, Matt, did you see what I did there? I got a beef with you. See? Wasn't that clever?
I heard that.
Yes.
I like that.
And you... Yes. Well, here's the thing. So Matt and I have been long engaged in public conversation about Chicago's best beef, which is a very, obviously, personal and important decision. So... Matt came out with his lovely wife and met my husband and I at the Mecca that is Johnny's Beef in Elmwood Park, Illinois.
Mary, are you getting paid for all these endorsements you do for the great Johnny's Beef?
I just try to share my love of beef with the world.
Do you eat for free there?
No, I do. No, I don't. Anyway, so long story short, Matt, who is an accomplished travel writer and food writer and food critic as well. So Matt's an expert in this space, and I will grant him that. He gave Johnny's a B+, Loretta.
Only a B+,
I know.
Oh, wait, Matt.
So
I might have a beef with you.
I'd say, yeah, exactly. See, Loretta is a West Sider like I am, Matt. So
Matt, they go on vacation for 2 weeks.
Matt's like already bored.
Yeah. Matt, they go on vacation for 2 weeks. I think my family goes into withdrawal.
That's right. People buy them and freeze them for the 2 weeks at Johnny's. Matt, can you just describe to the listeners why it is? I feel like I'm in that Saturday Night Live skit. Do you remember with the, with the bears, with the sausage and stuff like that? Why it is you would give this abysmal rating to Johnny's Beef?
Well, let me back up the bus here, as my irritating brother-in-law likes to say. So, first of all, I went on something called Beef Quest 23.
That's right. It was Beef Quest.
So
we had Hot Dog Quest
all...
22 and then Beef Quest 23.
Right.
Okay.
Dog Quest 22,
Dog Quest,
Beef Quest 23. So I went all over, and I found that, to my taste, the best Italian beefs were not from Italian beef joints proper, but they were from Italian specialty stores.
Yeah.
And I can tell you the three that I like the best.
Okay.
One, as West Sider, you should be quite familiar with. It's called Nottoli and Son.
Yep, I know Nottoli.
And the 7600 Black West Belmont.
Yep.
There was Bari, of course, in West Town.
Right.
And then actually Freddy's in Cicero. And the common denominator in all of these places, as you may already know,
they're great places
to hang out. They're real, Italian delis. They love food, and it's not just a wham-bam, thank-you-ma'am beef joint.
Right. That is true.
And the quality of the beef. So I realized I don't like the shaved, thin, semi-dry stuff. I don't like it drenched and soggy, and I know we have a strong point of disagreement there.
Yes, we do.
Dipped, turns into soggy way too fast, in my estimation. So, there were a lot of standard places that I gave a B+. Tony's is renowned at 71st and Pulaski. They got a B or a B+. There were several Rays on Narragansett. People swore it was the best. I was wholly unimpressed. So,
really?
Yeah, it just wasn't, that special. So part of my value add is being just a picky son of a gun, right?
Well, and I know this is your area, and you made some very good points about, about the quality of the beef and the bread, which I, which I am a...
It should have got an A-.
Yeah, I think, well, and he liked the Italian ice, and you had good things to say about the Giardiniera.
Yeah,
it's good Giardiniera. It's real Giardiniera, and
you're working your way up to an A, man.
Yeah.
Keep it up.
But Freddy's,
maybe I'll visit again, and I'll hit Gene and Jude's to have one of the best hot dogs.
Right.
In Chicago,
so didn't that win Dog Quest?
Gene and Jude's was one of my winners in Dog Quest 22.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, now that
Jim's
we've...
Original was up there, and one or two other places were up there, but there were places in Dog Quest, revealingly, that, as in the Beef Quest, that were, reputed to be among the best,
right.
like Byron's, Byron's on Irving Park.
Yeah.
And I went there. Their dog was a complete mess.
Yes.
You know,
the oversteamed bun,
a ton of salad on top of it, iceberg lettuce.
Yes.
What
is
iceberg
that doing there?
Lettuce, for gosh sakes.
Yeah, what is that? That's very wrong. I agree with
you.
Yeah.
So, you know, somebody's got to carry the torture. Yeah.
So is a B plus for Johnny's. I think you're on.
Well,
we're going to reschedule you.
He liked Italian ice. But you know what? It was quite cold, and Matt and his wife were stalwarts, and we sat outside like we should. And but it was quite chilly, and that may have somehow impeded your taste buds. That's what I'm. Perhaps they were a little too over. I don't know, frozen or something from the cold wind and all.
And let it be known that we've invited your brains. Not your taste buds.
That's right.
Today's show.
So we should, well, Matt and I needed to clear the air because we had a little bit of a, you know, Facebook tiff, the two of us. So now that we have reconciled and Matt has agreed to come on, I told him he was dead to me. And
I just let that roll right off my back, Mary.
You just ignored me, which made me even angrier. Anyway, but it was lovely. Matt has a lovely wife, and we had a lovely conversation, and I got to meet a friend of Matt's from elementary school. Matt knows everybody every place. You can just like walk in anywhere and somebody knows you. It's quite remarkable. So, but anyway, well, thanks for coming back on and to move to more serious things. I saw over the weekend this horrific story about a woman standing at the outdoor platform on the Red Line at Adams and Wabash, and some random man tried to push her onto the tracks, and she resisted him, and then he stabbed her to death. On a Saturday evening, I think about 1 in the morning. Matt, did you follow that story at all? I know you track these things.
I did, and sadly, I guess, but importantly, part of my work is keeping track of just the running string of horrific crimes in Chicago, so that one. For instance, some columnist asks, what's all the fuss about crime? Aren't Paul Vallis supporters racist?
Oh, my gosh.
I'll have a little bit of ammunition to be able to say, here's what the fuss is about crime.
Right.
And, of course, it goes to aggregate statistics, not just a string of one-off incidents. But those incidents aren't one-off anymore, and too many of them are just entirely horrific, like that one you brought up.
Well, you know, and we're all Chicago people on the show here. And so, you know, I went to Loyola, so I took the Red Line probably every other day, you know, because I went between the downtown campus and the Lakeshore campus. And on a Saturday night, I might have maybe wanted to have a girlfriend with me if I was out, say, after midnight. But it wouldn't have been unheard of if you were out, you know, downtown meeting friends, that you'd take the Red Line back up to the Loyola stuff. It could be any college kid. And, you know, then there's been a couple of cases at University of Chicago near where you grew up, Matt, where just innocent students, most of them from other countries. That one young man who had a summer internship, who was just taking the L back. From his son, and it was a stray bullet. Stray bullet hit him. There was this beautiful 50-year-old woman in Austin, where I grew up, getting her groceries out of her car, was hit by a stray bullet and killed. And the local churches in that community have come up with a $10,000, for information, a reward for information about her death, because, you know, it's unlikely the killers are ever going to be caught. So, I mean, these are just some... I know they're anecdotal, but they feel personal to me because I can see personal connections to all of them. Matt, let's just start with your piece where you analyzed recently the murder trends across the nation, and tell us what you found specific to Chicago, please.
We looked at 75 biggest cities for which public data were available on 2022 murders, criminal homicides, and we found that Chicago led the nation in number of homicides, and on murder rate, which some people prefer, we had the second highest murder rate among the nation's 20 biggest cities. If you draw back to a wider pool, we were 13th highest when looking at the 75 biggest cities in the country. But importantly, Chicago's murder rate, 25.8 per 100,000, it is 40% higher in 2022 than in 2019. And we found that was a common pattern in all of the biggest homicide hubs, that the murder rate in many of them, more than half, was going up. from 2019. And really, we all know the sort of the great unraveling began anew in 2020 after George Floyd was killed. So, you know, you can find a number to make it sound like Chicago's murder problem isn't bad, but you can find other numbers, as we did, to put it in greater perspective.
Yeah, it's and I know that there have been some attempts to sort of pick apart your report and to try to cast it in sort of a, you know, a racial light, which I really find that just frankly despicable, because we're talking about human lives here. We're talking about Black people and brown people and white people, and everyone in our city is being affected by this. But at any time you try to say, listen, we have got to sit down here and face the facts, you know, there's these side conversations that start to pop up that have absolutely nothing to do with the matter at hand. And Loretta, I know, you know, as a former prosecutor, you have a lot of insight on this as well.
Well, you know, Matt, just tell us why. Why is this murder rate up so high? Because it's certainly something that has started. I remember before, I mean, I went to law school later in life before spending, you know, 23 plus years at the Cook County State's Attorney. But even before that, when I was still in law school and working in the private sector, I remember riding the L one day in the morning on my way to work. So it's got to be like 8:15. And a man slid over in his seat next to me, a very happy man, and he offered to share his breakfast with me, which was a bottle in a brown bag. It was the last time I rode the L. And I go and start taking the Metro train, and I'm looking around, and I remember distinctly thinking, this is where all the former riders of the CTAL have gone. At 8 o'clock in the morning. So yeah. I can tell you, I would not get on the L today. I wouldn't do it. You're taking your life in your hands. But why is this murder rate up? Why are we number one?
Well, we're number one in total number of murders, and we're second among big cities in our murder rate. I think it's because we've really lost control of things. Alderman Ray Lopez has been pointing this out for several years, and this is one of those things you can't say, but he does, and I give him credit. He says the family unit has fallen apart. But more than that, I think, you know, murder, of course, we don't want to look at it in a vacuum, right? Other crimes matter greatly. They're up to many of the major crimes, of which there are seven. And we have a court system here in Cook County, and you've worked in it, so I'm sure you're aware of this, that, you know, keeps putting convicted felons back on the street very soon, often on probation. And we'll take a guy who's already got three or four felonies and earns a new felony charge, and they'll put him back on the street, even if it's maybe his fourth felony weapons bust and he's got three prior convictions. And then that guy goes maybe and carjacks someone or shoots them or kills them. And, you know, the judges and the prosecutors are surprised. And then he's held on no cash bail before trial. So multiply that by hundreds and thousands of instances. And, you know, it's not just parents. It's not just our rotten school system. But, you know, some people, including progressives, they say take a holistic look. We believe in a holistic view, too. There's a lot of pieces here. The courts, the schools, and parents are all part of this.
Well, Matt, can you just talk a little bit about the role that the gangs play in all of this? And I want to come back to your point about social structures, because I think it's very, very important. And I raised it one time in a meeting of city leaders and was, you know, called a racist to my face for raising it. I don't know. I just wanted to get to solutions. But I have a couple of police friends. I grew up in a very heavily policed neighborhood. And they have all said to me, I mean, without any kind of prompting on my part, the issue was the gangs were running the city, not the mayor. Can you speak to that? Did you look into any of gang involvement in the number of these murders? Like, how many of them are, you know, like this poor woman in Austin last week who was hit by, a stray bullet, had nothing to do with any of what was going on? And how much is this gang turf wars or gang drug wars or what have you. Do you have a sense of that?
I have a sense. I don't have numbers, partly because, you know, there's a very low murder arrest rate and an even lower actual case clearance rate. They play some games politically with the numbers at the Chicago Police Department, but that's another rabbit hole. So let's not go there. Gangs have changed. They've fractured, they've disintegrated, and, you know, a lot of them are barely gangs. They're sometimes factions of the same gang, and a lot of the kingpins aren't like the kingpins of old. They're younger. They can barely hoist their automatic weapons. They don't really know what they're doing, and they shoot and kill for utterly stupid reasons and sometimes no reason at all. There's a lot of play on social media now. Now, you still have, like, the Mexican drug cartels. Let's not, you know, forget about them. They're sending drugs into the city, but they're not the guys, you know, shooting and killing people by and large on the street. Maybe some of their underlings are, but, you know, there are degrees of separation. So I'm not sure it goes down to a large gang superstructure like we had in the 80s, early 90s, and 70s.
Right.
It's just more distributed responsibilities.
Well, you know, too, as a prosecutor, I used to, when I started, I noticed a couple of things. One, it was the grandmothers that were running the families in a lot of these instances. And my concern always remained, and I used to say to my colleagues, what are we going to do when these grandmothers go home to God? Because there was no one else in charge. And in so many of these families, and, you know, we can have a discussion about this, the loss of the father figure. This is where young boys learn to handle aggression and anger. It is the discipline, the relationship of a father to son. And, you know, we got to quit thinking that people are just these, I don't know, these canvases that we can paint whatever virtue we want on. Boys learn how to handle aggression and anger from a virtuous male in their sphere, and so the father in the family. But, you know, one of the things that I always noticed about, you know, these young boys, when they would come to a bond hearing, and, you know, when you're a new prosecutor, you do a lot of bond hearings. The kids were never looking at the defense. The public defender, most cases, that was there for them, was never looking at the prosecutor, me, who was going to jump all over them saying how bad they were so I could get a high bond, you know, to protect the community. The judge, they were never looking at the person who was going to make the decision. They were always looking in the gallery. And really what that said for me in so many ways is somebody here for me. And I'm going to tell you, one in 100 times, there would be somebody there. And it was usually a grandmother or, you know, a mom who's working three jobs to keep food on the table. But it was never any one of their gang members. Never. They were always out there alone. And I really think in so many ways the gang years ago used to be the family structure for a young man. But now the gangs, as you say, they are fractured. They are, not organized. They don't know what they're doing. And so now there is this loyalty to a hierarchical structure that doesn't even exist, that is causing nothing but problems. And a gang will be on one block, but on the next block, it'll be a different gang. So, you know, it's an insane asylum out there.
It's really kind of nuts. And there's, in the near term, you know, and this is a long-term issue, sort of reinstituting fatherhood in homes and particularly Latino and Black homes. We got the data from the State Health Department updated to 2020, and we found that 82% of Black births in Chicago are to unmarried mothers. For Latinos,
right.
It was about 56%. Whites and Asians were each down around 10%. So, you know, now if you look at other towns like Decatur or Rockford, half of white births are to unmarried mothers.
Right.
So, you know, it
right.
depends on the economy. We have mostly upper class educated whites in Chicago. But, you know, so this is a real issue, but that's still a long term fix. It's utterly vital. And Barack Obama brought this up in 2008
yes. right.
as a presidential candidate.
Right.
He made a Father's Day speech
yep.
about the importance of black fathers being around to do exactly what you're talking about. But in the near term, we need to unshackle our police.
Yes.
We need to assign more of them to district-level patrols. We've got half of them in special units or desk jobs. We need to let them do foot chases. We need to let them do car chases within reason. We need to, you know, end the nasty political rhetoric coming from some of this Socialist Party aldermen calling police department white supremacists.
Yes.
That actually happened. We can't have city council staffers referring to them as pigs.
Right.
That happened too. And we can't have people smashing their windshields when they come to break up an illegal appropriation of a large intersection for stunt driving.
Absolutely.
You know, we have to, that whole thing last summer, and I fear we'll see more of it this summer, is deeper than we might think. It's not harmless fun. It's an unauthorized taking
Amen.
Of public infrastructure. I've talked to Uber drivers. They're like, hey, I needed to get through, man. I saw an ambulance that couldn't get through.
Right.
This isn't beanbag, you know,
right.
when people take. So if you don't set the tone right at the get-go, you know, it's not going to go well. And it's not going well here. And crime is up this year so far
right.
compared to last year, which was up greatly over the year before and 2019. So we're talking about overall major crimes combined, the seven categories the FBI specifies. So things aren't looking good, and the city has a real choice now which direction to go in this mayoral election.
Right.
But neither candidate is talking about fathers.
Well, you know what I found interesting, Matt, in your list of solutions to this crime problem, I didn't hear one word about sending out a counselor, a mental health counselor with the police.
You know, you did not, and that's probably not an accident. I know.
And, we were wondering if maybe it was in a footnote we couldn't find or something.
You're funny. But,
yeah.
You know, I don't think that approach is not totally invalid. There's a place for it. But, you know, the thing is, when you send police to a mental health disturbance, very often the person will turn violent.
Amen.
And that has happened even in Chicago, where it turned out the disturbed person who was off their meds had a knife and tried to stab an officer. So.
Right.
Also, are social workers on call at 11 p.m.?
Right,
you know,
right.
I don't think so. So, and that's when a lot of the really hinky stuff happens. So it's problematic.
And you know what? I think our listeners need to understand, you know, we talk a lot about crime with knives and we think, oh, well, it's not a gun. You hit the right artery, an individual can bleed out seconds before or minutes before help can get to them to stop that bleeding if you hit an artery.
Yeah.
A knife is equally as dangerous to the victim as a gun is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. And this great emphasis on gun crime, which, you know, is this sort of highly politicized phrase that is always trotted out. We've got to stop gun crime. Yes, of course, there's the obvious point that guns don't shoot themselves. And I know the progressives hate to hear that.
Yeah.
But, you know,
guns
there are more
don't
than
shoot
four...
themselves, Matt. You got to put 6 pounds of pressure on the average trigger in order to pull
exactly.
that.
Exactly. But more than that, you know, look how we don't handle weapons felony violations and weapons felony charges. In Cook County courts, we've got guys with, you know, 2, 3, 4 prior weapons felony convictions, and they've been let out on parole or probation, and they go out and do more bad stuff. Then you've got similar guys coming through, as I said before, with a new weapons charge, and we let them out. And based on their prior convictions, they're already ticking time bombs.
Right.
They should be held behind bars at sentencing for a good number of years. And before trial, if they've got three prior convictions, before trial, yes, on a high cash bond or no cash bond, for protection of the community. They are a risk to the community at large. And we shouldn't forget, too, the Safety Act, which tried and, you know, is now we're gonna hear, I think, a preliminary ruling as soon as later this week. It's due. You know that the court temporarily stayed this act that would end cash bond in Illinois, and we'll find out soon where that's going. But the impulse behind it amongst the Democratic majority, the huge Democratic majority in Springfield, was, you know, we must end this. It's unfair to poor people, and the judge can still hold someone on no cash bond. But in fact, in the fine print, the barriers to doing that were great. There was pushback. Some of the language got changed. It's not as toxic a bill as it was, but it still authorizes anonymous complaints against police. There are many things wrong with this bill. And the point is, you get whom you elect. You get what they're going to do. And in Chicago, one despairs slightly to see 33% or 34% registered voter turnout in the mayoral primary. It's not going to be much better in the general election April 4th. So most people have given up on the idea that politics is where it's at. And so we see an increasing number of cases where people are defending themselves with their legal firearms. Is this the future, the Mad Max world, not?
There was just that case in Norridge. Actually, it's right around the corner from where my brother lives in his condo. And these two armed individuals attempted to break into an 82-year-old, and he pulled out a gun and he shot one of them. And they were gone right quick. I mean, you hate that this is the world we live in. Well, Matt, as we, anytime you're on, it always flies. But as we just kind of wrap up here, you mentioned April 4th. And obviously, you know, we, as a non-for-profit entity here, cannot endorse or oppose any particular candidate. But
no, nor can I.
Right.
Same deal.
Correct. So, but this is a very stark choice we have in front of us. And looking into your, you know, your wire points crystal ball, how do you see this going, or do you think anything could change between now and April 4th?
I think it's very much up in the air, and you know, the thing we need to remember is pundits said the repudiation of Lori Lightfoot in the primary election, the first time in some 40 years that an incumbent had not made it through the primary, signified a reckoning over crime. Well, look, they elected for the finals two very different guys.
Right.
Voters did. And yes, obviously, Paul Vallis is the law and order candidate. Brandon Johnson is much more of a classic progressive and believes, you know, in $800 million in new taxes, a good bit of that to fund social programs and community investment, as he calls it. Now, you know, Vallis has his own community investment. Sometimes their language overlaps, which is something that people aren't talking about much. I think for voters, look into the details. Do what you never do. Don't just go by gut instinct. Actually look at their policy proposals, and particularly on economic development and crime and public education. You know, who calls out very low standardized test scores as a worrisome sign? And who is it that says achievement tests are a tool of white supremacists, you know? And then that's all out there.
Right.
In debate comments, press comments, forum comments and a lot of other stuff is in their position papers. So,
but Matt,
I think voters,
Matt, in violation of their own union rules, the Chicago teachers are giving donation, are giving their union dues collected. They're giving $8 per teacher to his funding, to Brandon Johnson's funding. I mean, to me, when you mentioned test scores and then an $8, I mean, it's like, what, $3 million? That is ludicrous that the union would be able to control the mayor of the city in an even greater amount than they currently do, based on the fact that in direct violation of their own union playbook, the union is now giving this man contributions. I find that incredible.
Yeah. So this, Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, I know we need to close out here, so I'll make this quick, but I think two things. The real fixing of the rules occurred in Springfield a year or two ago when the Democratic majority agreed to an all-elected school board, because that very powerful Teachers Union Political Action Committee is going to own the school board. So that's a huge one right there. But then I think you really got to get back, and this circles back to crime. Public education matters greatly. School choice is very important, not some finagled version with TIF revenues that Paul Vallis is talking about, but the real, you know, true blue, full-on raging school vouchers, or even better, educational savings accounts. And if you look at the, like, 50-plus schools where, you know, zero students are proficient in either math or reading, if you look at the 25% proficiency rate in reading and math, broadly speaking, in Chicago public schools, and then you look at reading proficiency for black students across all of Chicago public schools, it's 11%. Math proficiency is 6%. That is utterly scandalous. If Brandon Johnson wants to talk about institutional racism, I'll agree with him. And say that Chicago public schools, by tolerating that kind of outcome for black students, is in fact racist, by not going down to Springfield and pushing super hard for competition. They're living in a cocoon, and that has to end.
Amen.
And it's so just fundamentally abhorrent, because, you know, what future do these children have if they cannot read and they cannot write, and we put them out into some of these neighborhoods, you know, to fend for themselves, essentially? It's just horrific to think of how desperate and sad some of these families must be when they're stuck in this situation and they can't get out of it because of their zip code. It's absolutely terrifying. Well, Matt, I am so grateful to you and to your colleague Ted Dabrowski and the others at Wire Points, your terrific team, for everything that you're doing to bring the facts to us. And listeners, if you'd like to read Matt's work, you can go to wirepoints.org, and you'll find them there. And Matt, we hope that you'll come back on and join us again, maybe around the time of the election, to either cry into our coffee or perhaps be celebrating. I one of the two. But this is a very, very important election. I think it's all going to come down to turnout. People have to show up for this election.
And despite Matt's views on Johnny's beef.
Yes, we have moved if past you're not that, reading, Loretta, that is in the rearview mirror now.
Okay.
We have moved past this.
All right. Well, if you're not reading Wire Points, the question is, why not?
That's right. Well, Matt, I thank you so much for giving us so much of your time. It was a pleasure to be with you. And listeners, don't go away. We'll be back for our wrap-up in just a moment. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Frelick on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.